Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am so sorry that I came on late. The Blog Talk was acting a little crazy. How is 313 and 248? How are you guys tonight?
Hello? Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, nice. How's everything going?
Good.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you real good.
Okay.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Now, Casualty of Silence. Wow. First of all, did you enjoy your Martin Luther King Day off?
I did.
Okay. Okay. Now, Casualty of Silence. Can we do a little recap? If you don't mind doing a little recap of where we left off at, can you remember?
Not really. We said so much.
I mean, okay. I think we left off on chapter 4, between chapter 4 and 5. We left off at the part where, let me think. When you start, you found this new family that when you guys moved across the street from the police station.
Okay.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you moved across the street from the police station, the people that you met, come on, this is your story.
Well, are you talking about the because it was a diverse, mixture of different races. It was a diversity of races. And the first family that I had met was the, they was, I want to say white and Latino family.
Yes.
Is that the one you call out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think they was the first one that we had met, along with the next door neighbors to them. They was an all white band group. And
okay. Now, what about you start having sexual relationships at a very young age, not the forced relationships, but actual having sex with young men or young boys at a young age. Did you look older than what you were?
Yes, I looked older than what I was.
Okay.
I had that shape that the people thought that I was older.
Okay, all right. Because you dated a guy at 13, you was dating this guy who was driving a car. How old was, I think it was Ronnie. Was it Ronnie?
Yes. That happened after my second time. That's when that happened. I was introduced to him by my godmother. My godmother would take me out to the hall, to the little club. So I actually, not to the little club, like the cabaret hall. So I actually was started out at a young age doing that party and listening to the music and stuff. Really, really younger then, but going out to where, but she would keep an eye on me. She would make sure. But, you know, us kids, we could still sneak and do stuff.
Okay. Now, Finn, what happened with you and Steven?
Steven, he just came into the picture as far as he came to visit his father. And I would have sexual relationship with him. I also learned at that moment that I wasn't being satisfied unless I was being abused.
Yes,
so I would force
them
to abuse me.
Yes,
I would force them to abuse me. And so that there is because of what happened to me as far as being abused younger, I became accustomed to it. But my first encounter was me being raped at 12 years old, and I was being, I was beaten at 12.
Wow.
And then again, I was beaten again. So both my encounters of my first sexual experience, which was taken from me, wasn't just like I wanted to do it. That was my first experience, and that's the only way I knew how to enjoy it. So that's when I noticed that I would force him to actually hit me. So my domestic violence came a little bit different from everyone. I provoked mine.
But you know what? You know what, Ms. Moore? When you said something very key. And when you're in a domestic violence type relationship, a very abusive relationship, actually your story and what happened to you and how everything kind of shaped it to your life is probably how a lot of other women, but because they don't identify with that, they go on in these abusive relationships not paying attention to where it actually came from. So you actually saying, admitting, you know what, this came from this, we miss that point. We don't talk about when mom and dad used to abuse us when we were little, then we felt drawing to those type of men that, you know, we don't feel good unless they beat us or call us out of our name. Because guess what? When I was a kid, that's how I was raised. I was raised with people calling me not by my name, but by an animal's name or treat me bad. So we grow up into that. Have some women who've never been abused, don't even know how it is, lived in a nice home, had a nice life, family, the whole nine yards, and they become in that relationship. So with you identifying with your abusers doing what they did, you find yourself, well, you know what? I don't feel loved unless somebody's cocking me over the head or pinning me down and sexually abusing me.
Right.
That's a distinction that's never been ever, you know, really been said, or I let me not say never been said, but I've never heard it. You connected it in that way, which is very good.
Right, and that was my point. So I tell a lot of when I talk about my story, I tell them that. I said mine's kind of different because I set out to do it, because I speak to that, because at the age of 7, that's when my physical abuse started with my mother. So that was the only way that, because our parents were supposed to love us and she beat me the way she was beating me, that's how I felt, that that's how I was supposed to be. That was the only way that I identified as somebody else loving me. So that's what I would seek, and that's what I had him to do. And that way, in turn, because I had got raped on 2 times, that's what I knew. So I identified that also mentally as far as the best way to have satisfaction as far as sexually.
Yeah, that's the only way you could relate to relationships, actually, were to be in those type of relationships that hurt, because you weren't taught what love was. And when love did come into your life, it didn't stay. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It came and it went. When somebody got close to you, it didn't last that they got close to you.
And
so
also,
go ahead.
Right. I was going to say also, because they wasn't doing what I wanted them to do, which was the violent part, I would not like them at all. I would move on to the next one until I found someone that was tough and or a bad boy type or whatever you want to call it. And so that's what I looked for. And it was just like in my when I was 13 and I got raped, and I think you might have read that part already, where I was raped, but when I got home, I got a beat.
Some of the other states you got to call her.
So I had got beaten. My son don't know. You can hear him talking. That's my son talking. I had them to call in, too. Mondale, be quiet. He called.
Okay.
And I can hear him.
Okay, now, also, you wind up up going to juvenile. Let's talk about the idea that, let's talk about Lena and your mom. What happened with you, Lena and your mom, and you winded up going to juvenile?
Okay. I wound up going to juvenile is because my I went over to a friend house and I kind of like stayed out. So I was so frightened about getting beat. I had just stayed out. I stayed. I wouldn't go back home. So I was gone for 4 days. Not actually running away, just scared to go home. So when they found me, so somebody else found me and he held me. Till they got there, they was like, come on, we're going to the police station and let them know we found you. And my first man was, they about to beat me to death, and I'm not about to do that, because my mother would let my cousin do the beating, too. We wouldn't just get beat by her, we were getting beat by my cousin, too. So when we got in the police station, I kept telling them I don't want to go home with them because they about to beat me. And so when we got to fighting, and that's when I fought back. I was like, you not gonna get your big butt on me. And I got to fighting her back. And so they took me, and they put me in the cell. And I'm thinking they're going to take me to somebody home or something. No, they took me to juvenile. And so once I got in juvenile, I was treated just like the other ones was treated. The ones who came in there on a bag, case or whatever, I was just like them.
Now, this is what I didn't understand. This is what I didn't understand. Okay, most of the time, you don't abuse your children in front of the police. But see, that goes back to let you know how they felt about us. Because usually you don't do that. The police officer would hit you and say to you, okay, ma'am, you can't do this in front of us. Let us sit down and talk to her and see if we can convince her to go home. They wouldn't have just let you stand there and your mom and your auntie fight you. That was so unbelievable. I couldn't understand that.
And I couldn't either.
That's how they view that. That's why I was trying to get, we talk about it all the time, how we have to understand. We were not cared about. People didn't give us, and I'm going to be honest, did not give a shit about us. Because any other person, they would have, and they show that on the store, on the shows, that on TV, whenever that happens. The police intervene, are actually abusing your child in front of me. And how disrespectful is that? They should have separated you out, put you in one room, put them in other room. Then somebody come and talk to you, and then talk to the mom and convince them, okay, you guys, if you're going to act like this, she can't go home with you. We're going to put her in foster care. You weren't doing anything wrong. You was trying to tell them what would happen if they send you home. I couldn't understand that concept. I couldn't grasp that. Why would they not somebody intervene? And then they wanted to send you to juvenile. Why? You weren't being bad. You just didn't want to go home with them.
Right, because of how frightened I was being beaten.
Yeah. So that's why I said, I guarantee that was a white child. I guarantee you that child wouldn't have went to detention, to no damn juvenile detention, because you didn't commit no crime.
I didn't, and I didn't understand that either. Although I stayed in there, maybe a couple of days, because I even pinpointed the day that I knew I got out of there. That was on a Thursday, and I was happy to get up out of there because it was the same thing that was going on that was in the school that I was escaping from was the bully, and I got in there, and it was the exact same treatment. And I'm looking like, and then just to be, like I got to defend myself on the outside. Now I got to defend it on the inside. And I didn't ask to be there. I thought that was just going to take me to a nice home. But that goes to show also, that goes to also show the same incident 2 years prior where when I got raped and they took me from the hospital to my mother and she barely could stand up and nobody said nothing. Even when we had to go testify against the rapist, the guy who raped me, when we went to court, got on the Jefferson bus, everybody staring at us, looking at her, looking like she can't even stand up straight. And we get to court, and she's doing the same thing, and not even a judge, not the bailiff, not whoever was down there step in to say she not capable. And I mean, this boy and his family threatened me, and I'm scared. She can't even protect me worth nothing. And they did not even step in to say, well, she can't stay here with us. They did not step in. Nobody stepped in. And I still feel that that was wrong because I'm 12 years old. This family just threatened to kill me because their son he robbed me of everything that he could do. He robbed me of my first time ever knowing what it's going to feel like to have a first time intimate with somebody that you cared about. But then in turn, I just started hurting myself by doing at an early age promiscuous stuff and everything. But I was just mad because one, you didn't take me when I got raped. And y'all see how she was. She couldn't stand up. She barely could talk to you. She didn't understand nothing they were saying. Then, two, we go to court the same way. And then the public seeing it because we on the bus.
And nobody says nothing.
Nobody said nothing.
We don't want to talk about it. Yeah, I can't. And again, like I said, when it comes to us, it's totally ignored. It's not important, you know, that she's standing in front of you high as a kite. Now, I don't know what happened. Why is there such a breakdown in communication when it came to African-Americans? Now, some people they would have pursued. But your issue was blatant that they should have taken you kids out of that house, whether y'all wanted to be taken out or not.
Mm-hmm.
If they had if they even had an inkling of an idea that something that you guys should have left that same night into that door, you guys should have left out of there. But again, because it's us, we're not that important. We're not that important. Important, you know, and I don't understand that. Now, excuse me. Now, I'm looking at the part where Lena portrayed you. What happened with Lena? Remember that?
No. Tell me a little bit more, then I'll tell you exactly where I am.
You said you fell asleep on a dining room floor.
Okay.
And you woke up, you heard somebody whispering. You didn't know who it was. But when you actually opened your eyes and you looked, you saw her, somebody you had a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Chicken? Is that what y'all called him?
Mm-hmm.
And you was devastated with the idea that she... I mean, did he never approach you? He knew
you.
You
said that.
You woke up and found Lena and Chicken having sex.
Right, and because he was the guy he wasn't the one that did it, but the focus of me being raped was I'm going after him. He was the cute guy.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to portray myself as being older, so he didn't know how old I was. So he being more well endowed down in there, we was not able to have sex because he was too large to go in. So when he left out the room, his friend came in. Which is another guy I know, and that's how I got raped by his friend. But a little bit after that is when my cousin is being intimate with him. And I felt that I had that big crush on him that it devastated me because I had the crush on him, but then I still couldn't tell nobody because our age different.
Yeah.
See, I told him I was older.
Yeah. And if they would have found out, if they would have found out what happened with you and him, he would have went to jail.
I don't even think the day was even coherent enough to even, because she was doing drugs, my mama was doing drugs. It was just like a drug infested neighborhood as far as just the pill forms and stuff like that. So. I think I was more frightened of being beaten than him even going to jail. And
uh-huh.
then at the time that he was telling me, that, well, his friend, well, after he raped me, when he started talking about he's going to go kill my family if I tell anybody, that's when we was just getting the gang violence up there, which I still miss because I didn't know.
Uh-huh.
And I still don't know how I miss being out and not involved in the midst of all that gang violence, but it was right in our neighborhood, and I didn't see none of it. I think I was just in my own little world, and I did not see none of that, and I live in the same neighborhood
uh-huh.
I was in. So I got scared that he was actually going to kill my family, and so when I snuck back in the house, my mother and my cousin was woke, and I couldn't tell them that I got raped again because he was going to kill us, so I got a beating. Actually protecting my family.
Man, that is bad.
It is, and it hurted me so bad because I'm like, okay, I'm just getting beaten because they think I'm having sex, and I can't tell them the truth, so I just had to put that. I just had to go with the beating. I had to let them because I was trying to protect them. So sometimes, even though we know that they are abusing us the way we is, we still have that bond or that loyalty to them because they are. She was my parent. She was my mother.
Exactly.
So I'm still
exactly.
protecting her and still loving her and still trying to get her. And I was mad because you let this woman beat me and y'all still not asking. Y'all just going to assume that I was having it. But I did sneak out the house to go try to be with Chicken and all that other stuff. So.
Man. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Ernestine Moore, the author of The Casualty of Silence.
Thank you. corner now. If you want to be a junkie, why? Remember Fred and David.
School bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You see me around the neighborhood and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. My teacher tells me in this country, we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
To help fight hunger in central Louisiana and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org.
All right, you guys, we are back with Through the Eyes of the Black on your Say Your Piece radio network, and we're talking with Ernestine Moore, the author of Casualty of Science. Excuse me, Casualty of Science. I mean, silent, you guys. I'm so sorry tonight. If you only knew what day I had. Okay, now, let's talk about, okay, we got to the part about Lena and Chicken, the crush on Chicken. Now, when did the kids come into play?
My first son came into play. I got pregnant when I was 14.
Okay. So tell us about that. When I sneak in, being permissions, doing
whatever just to hurt myself and messed around with this older white person, because my son is biracial, and I was messing around with this older white man, which at the time we needed to have a Maury show back then, because when I got old, my son got older, he didn't look like the guy that I had thought that I was pregnant by. He didn't look like that guy that I had said that was the father. And I had relations with two white persons within a two-day span. I didn't care. I was all hurting myself. I didn't care. But I didn't do it with just anybody. I had to have some kind of type of attraction towards you just in order for that, because I couldn't stand nobody to touch me and different that. But I had to have some kind of attraction. So I would go over his house, and next thing I know, I was wound up pregnant, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm about to get killed. And I hid it for a long time. I hid it. I waited until I was doing so bad, and I started skipping school really, really bad. I started skipping school. I started putting on the baggy clothes. When I would unlock the basement window and sneak back in the house or go skip at the park or behind the alleyway, I would skip school anywhere I could just not to go to school, because I couldn't deal with the bullying and all that, the teasing and all that other stuff. So close to 5 months, I said, okay, if I get close to 5 months, she can't make me have an abortion, because I wanted to have a baby. Somebody took, you know, you be at the age when we say we're looking for somebody that loves us, then that's when the babies start coming in. And that's how I deal with him. And I told our neighbor across the street, which wound up being my third child's grandmother. But
okay.
I told her, she said, "You want me to tell your mother?" And I said, "Yeah." So I let her tell my mother. Soon as she left out the door, he go to beating. My mama beat me with the broom. Anything she could possibly, she just was punching me and just sitting on top of me. I'm, by that time, I'm big, I'm showing. And she just beat me, and I got it loose because I started fighting her back because I was like, she's trying to kill my baby. She's trying to kill my baby. So I got up and ran out the house, and she ran behind me, and she threw a big brick and hit me dead in the back of my back, in the middle of my back.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
and
God.
And our
your mom?
Mm-hmm. She beat me with everything she could think of, her fists, her hands, everything, just the broom, because she always targeted me with the broom, and my head was always her main target. She didn't care. She just, whatever she hit me, my head was her main focus. And so when I ran out that house, she threw that brick, and I got saved from the neighbors down the street, which wound up being, later on down the line, my niece auntie. So he became my,
uh-huh.
And then she became my son's godmother. And she took me in and she told my mother, "You're not about to hit her. You're not about to hit her no more." Because at that time, a lot of people didn't know that I was being abused either. So that's where the secret is at. All this stuff I'm telling now is like it's coming out. People didn't know I was being abused. She didn't know. You know, they saw her with the pill stuff, but they didn't know the stuff was going on inside of the house.
Man. So, okay, now you wind up staying with her after that? You had the baby with her?
Uh-uh. She just kept me. She let me. I spent the night overnight, and she wound up talking to my mother. Mm-hmm. So I stayed at her house. And when she wound up going down the street, because that block was such a small block, so she wound up going to the house and talking to her, and she was like, "If you don't want her to keep the baby, I'll take him down." No, she was like, "No." And then she wound up after he was born, that wound up being her baby. She wouldn't let me take him nowhere or nothing, so. She did all that to try to kill me and wind up being taking them over.
Man, so you let your baby be over there during the time that she was taking these pills too?
I did. And at the time, I'm not knowing this, not paying attention because I'm still, that's when all the mental issues start coming and I'm just acting like just non-caring. And I did. Once I started writing this book, that's when I noticed. I was like, okay, I messed up. I put him, and I trusted her with him. But for some reason, she never harmed him. She was always aware of him doing, making sure he didn't fall. She was high, but she knew what she was doing with him. She never did anything out the way from him. But I did.
Now, let's talk about your dad in this time. What was going on with your dad? Where was your dad at this time?
Same place where he was at, where he just, when he would come over, he would visit us, give us money. He was disappointed. See, I hear that. My cousin had to tell him, because he would always tickle us, play with us, and he noticed that I wasn't playing with him when I was still pregnant. And again, we didn't let him know nothing of stuff, nothing about the abuse or how she was doing it. No, we just told him we wanted to get away. Our main concern was she was high all the time and she wasn't feeding us, buying us anything or whatever. But we hid the abuse part from him still. And so when he came over, it's summer and I'm wrapped up in all these clothes and sheets and stuff. And my cousin said, "You want me to go out there and tell him?" And I said, "Yeah." So when she went and told him, he came back in, and I just bust out crying because I felt like I disappointed him. Although he wasn't there to raise us, I still had a big I had that big respect for him. But in the meantime, I was still trying to hurt myself. At the same token, because I didn't care no more. Everything was robbed. My soul became dark, and I had the anger issues. I had everything that was going on. I had those issues. And he, after the baby was born, he did help me out a little bit, but he wanted, his main thing was he wanted me to go back to school.
Uh-huh.
That was his main issues.
Okay. Now, your mom was still getting high during this time, right? Your dad
right.
never thought to help you guys, take you guys out of the situation. He still didn't want to take that leap and help you guys out.
No. And I talked to my sister the other day after we did the show the last time, and she said
uh-huh.
She was mad at my father. I wasn't. I just kept on just going by. His word was, soon, I'm going to get you out of there soon. And he kept on saying soon. And so when I wrote it, I said soon never got pain. It was our age that got us out of that situation.
Uh-huh.
I turned 18, and I left. And I had no business being with the person, which is my daughter's daddy. I had no business being with him because I still was suffering from all the abuse that she had did and not seeking any kind of help. So I wasn't in no shape or form of being in a relationship with anybody, but I was trying to escape to have somebody just to love me, just to
mm-hmm.
love me. And he was showing all the attention he was showing and stuff, but in the meantime, he was still abusing me in certain ways. He wasn't there. He was doing different things. Come to find
mm-hmm.
out, he was doing drugs himself.
What?
Yes. The drug scene was with them. It was hitting real well.
Yeah, he was. All that time, he did a doggone good job of hiding it.
He did a good job. He was working. He did not look like it. I could not tell. I was like, wow, all I know is he wasn't giving me money. I started snapping. And when we was there, he criticized me because one way she would teach us how to clean up the house her way, but I guess it was the wrong way to him. And he was talking and I was snapped. And so me and him was in outside being in an abusive relationship because I would beat him up or he would get one on me. I was destroying the house. I was just doing everything until one day after my father started treating me not like he was. So I started getting mad at him and I just blurted out, "You're not my father. I don't care about you, nothing," or whatever. I wrote him a nasty letter, said, "I don't ever want to see you, know, nothing no more," or whatever. He died. My father died. And I I was screaming so bad. I was like, oh, my God. He was crying because he wanted me to talk to him, and I would not talk to him. I said, no, because you treated me like my mama doing, and I will never forgive you, and I would not talk to him. The next thing I know, my mama called crying saying that he had that, and that hurted me so bad because although I said those things to him, I didn't mean it, but I was hurt. And then he died.
Oh,
and that was the most
God.
Thing. And so when I was trying to get him to go to the funeral with me and everything, he wouldn't. I got angry and I stabbed him in the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
I stabbed that man.
What? Wait a minute. Hold up. Repeat what you just said.
When my daughter's father would not take me, I was pregnant with her, he would not take me to the funeral. I stabbed him dead in his shoulder. Because my anger, I had so much anger in me, I was just like off. Yeah, I was enraged, but I wasn't out to how the crime is today, I just go randomly pick somebody. I wasn't like that. He would do things and he would trigger something. He would say something and it would trigger me and the rage, it would be like a bull just coming out. And I stabbed him.
Mm-hmm.
We were sending each other to the hospital, but he went more than I did.
So this was back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was back and forth. He wasn't near, and he wouldn't help me. And I mean, when I needed him to be there for me, he wasn't there. And we went back and forth at the hospital.
Oh,
I said, okay, you whatever, you got one on me because you sucker punched me. Now, I went to the hospital one time. He went twice because he broke his hand trying to hit me. And I was like, anybody tell you to hit me? And he broke his hand. But I did. I stabbed him right in his shoulder. And he kept those stitches in for a whole year.
What?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Now, what happened with your mom?
My mom now?
No. There was an incident where your mom, where you walked in her room, you heard something. It sounded like she was talking to herself or hallucinating, and you called 911. What happened with that situation?
She, this was back, so we had actually jumped a little here, but going back to when my son was born, this is when my son was born, and they had to walk from the hospital. My son was born in November. They walked from the hospital, and she started getting sick. And so the pneumonia set in.
Okay.
And so she started hallucinating, fighting, and all that stuff. And again, of course, we would catch the bus to go see her, and she still was treated us like that. She was still treated us wrong, so, but we still every day catch the bus. That my father was still alive too, but my father actually died of pneumonia, and we was like, he wanted to die because he knew she was just saved from pneumonia. He could have been saved. And it's like when they started hallucinating and stuff like that, that's when you gotta really like know something that ain't right. Because he started doing the same thing.
Wait a minute. Was it more to this pneumonia?
No, it was just pneumonia.
Usually you can get help with pneumonia, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mother had a 50-50
They were
chance.
Very young.
Yeah.
They were very young. They weren't old. So why didn't they get the help medically, for the pneumonia? Both of them could have lived.
But my mother, she pulled through.
Sorry, your mom, so I apologize.
Yeah, she pulled through.
Your mom, okay.
Mm-hmm. She pulled through, but my dad didn't. Because, that's what made us curious is why he didn't, he knew what happened. He was there helping us with her, like making sure we could get down there or telling us she's going to be okay and all that other stuff. And then Tolkien turned around, he dies from the same thing she had.
Man.
So I think he gave up on life.
Yeah, that sounds like what it sounded like that's the end. He just didn't want to fight anymore, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
How old was your dad?
I think he was 47.
Oh, my God.
I think
God.
He was in his 40s.
He was young.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first son. What happened with your second son?
The next baby was a girl.
A girl, okay. So
yeah, the next one was a girl.
I want to welcome 609 in the house. Now, go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the second one was a girl. And just like with her, with the first baby, I was beating with her the same exact way, except for the brick wasn't thrown. It played out almost the same with her, except for, again, I said, Maury should have been there. Maury's show should have been there then at that time, too, because I got our dates mixed up or whatever. Didn't know about dates. See, I didn't know about any of that because who was there to teach me how to know how to do any of this stuff? Like, you know, both to know when this happened or whatever. So we didn't know. But I got her father mixed up too, and with her father.
So you were half. Okay, now how old were you when you had?
I had her when I was. I got pregnant when I was 16 and had her when I was 17.
Oh, man. So, Okay, let me ask you this question. This is just a simple question. Did y'all know what condoms were?
No.
No.
No. Mm-mm. And then at the time, I didn't care. I was hurting myself, and I was just hurting serious, so I didn't care. But no, nobody was there. I was just randomly just out there. Just trying
to
hurt myself.
So you was really putting more ways. So in more ways than one, you were putting yourself in a lot of danger, danger. That's with the difference, the STDs, syphilis, gonorrhea, AIDS, really just like out there.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't realize you were doing all this?
Nope, didn't know.
Or you just didn't care?
About it. Didn't even care, but didn't even know nothing about it at all. It took me, it was just like, I didn't know about being a different race until I was in my teens when I found out that we were white, black, that our race was black and theirs was white. Because we was never taught any of that. Mm-hmm. I was in my teens when I realized it was a different race. We didn't see color. Nobody ever taught us about anything about color. Well, we just saw people as just a human, somebody just like us, and that was it. Regardless of the color, we just knew it was somebody to play with. And
okay,
I was in my teens when I found it out.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Man. You know, that's very unusual up north. You know that, right? You hear me? Yeah, see, that's very unusual up north. Even though we played with other races, we knew that they were not like us. Because that's where we started using the word honkies and crackers. When they would call us niggas, honkies and crackers. And
I said,
went back the whole 9 yards.
Yeah, we didn't do none of that. We just played with whoever wanted to play with us.
But you know what? We still played with them. They used to come and stay with us at the house. They used to wear the clothes that we couldn't wear. A lot of poor white kids used to come take baths in our bath. So when we got down here, our culture shocked when we moved down here, where the word nigger was not really no longer used up there to the point where it was, you know, the back and forth. But when you come to the South, it's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different ball game. Once you learn the history about what your people went through and you move down in the South and they still got that kind of attitude or that mentality, it gives you a whole nother about wanting to choke some peoples. I want to say it like that. It gives you a whole nother feeling down here. When we moved here, culture shock here. Oh, yes. Definitely. We got a big culture shock. It was like we were so mad at my mom moved us, or we were mad. If we could beat her up, we would have beat her up. That's how we felt about her taking us out of our element, moving us to these backwoods of the South. But anyway, okay, now you talked about your daughter. So you had two of your kids. Were they both biracial?
No. The second one, I thought she was, but then she wasn't. I was 15, after I had my son, just because of all the trauma, everything that was happening to me, me being raped by somebody black, I subconsciously only was around white people. I didn't like it.
Okay.
Didn't like being around nobody black or nothing. So this guy caught me coming out of the store, and he pulled a gun on me. And he said that he liked me. He was this old, ugly, black-looking thing, looking like a pimp, old, broke-down pimp. And he said, he pulled a gun on me and told me, if you're going to like me, you're going to like me. And I'm like, I wanted to say something so bad, but I learned to keep my mouth shut because, he had a gun on me, so at first I was going to, like, not care and just say whatever I wanted to say to him. But then I was like, I can't like you. I'm only 15 years old. You know you're not telling me, you know, he kept telling me because I looked older. He kept telling me that I wasn't 15, and I said, yes, I am. How you going to tell me how old I am? And so then he said, what, you don't like black people and stuff like that? After that, that's when I realized he was right, because nobody I was around was black anymore. And after that, my mind flipped back into the regular me, and then I started talking to the black guy, and that's why I wound up getting pregnant with her, by him.
Okay. Now, then after her, you had a boy.
A girl.
Right?
Another girl.
Another girl you had. Ah. Now, was she black?
She's black. She's the one that's who daddy I stabbed in the shoulder and stuff like that. Yep.
Okay.
She, I had her. And that's at that moment when I was pregnant with her was the first time I realized I was molested by my mother's boyfriend. And finally, everything that was suppressed came to light. Everything came out. And me and my sister sitting on the porch, and his name came up. Well, he came over to the house, and we trying to figure out how he knew where my mother lived at. And when he left, my sister said, "That old dirty bastard, he molested me." And I looked at her, and I was like, "He molested you, too?" It was just like a regular conversation, like shock. And we just said it wasn't like it was like a hysterical, "You molested me," and stuff like that. It wasn't like that. It was just came out in a regular conversation. And we was like, I said, "He molested you, too?" And I'm thinking, like, how he do that? And it was just like that manipulation where we didn't know. We in the same house. We in a flat, two-family flat, and rooms all right next to each other. How we didn't know. And that was a shocker. But I was pregnant, and that's when all of it started coming out, what happened to me at 7 years, you know, 5, 7 years old.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you something. Okay, all during this time, did you seek any kind of mentor?
Say that again.
I said, during all this time, did you seek any type of mentor? Did your school, even though you didn't go to school all the time, but when you did go to school, did they list any changes in you? You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. No. And at that point, when I first got raped the first time and I went that one day, it was like they shut down. They didn't transfer me to nobody or anything. It was like it wasn't no more mental health places to go to. It wasn't nobody, you know, the doctors didn't notice, no nothing.
And so here goes this young girl. From the age of 7 all the way up to 17, 18 years old, because by now you're on your second child, right?
Third. Mm-hmm.
Okay, by 18 years old, you had 3 children?
Yep.
Oh, my God. So all this time, what were you doing? How were you making a living? How were you taking care of your children? What was going to be function? And see, what bothers me, and I can't understand the ideal that this was going on with this young lady. And I know you're in the ghetto and you're in the bad neighborhoods or whatever, but nobody paid attention to this idea. You probably weren't the only girl that was going through this, but there was no mental, physical, any other kind of help that would have helped you guys get through this, and you probably wouldn't have continued to have the children wedlock for all these different sexual abuse that continued, even though you voluntarily had sex with these men. It still was a form of sexual abuse that you were doing to yourself.
Right.
There was no trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you... See, I'm trying to figure out how would I be able to, and that's why I say I'm not knocking nothing from any other race of women, but I'm saying through the eyes of the black woman, we have gone through so much. What is it that you got up every day and functioned? What made you give up and say, you know what, this morning I got to get, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to live another day? What you motivated from the 7, which you didn't understand, up to the age of 8 to 3 babies? What you continue to, you know, to function? Because I didn't hear that after all you've been through, that I could have walked in your shoes. No way I could say, you know what, yeah, and it wouldn't even bother me. I want you to tell, how did you were able to go from 17 and survive it?
I think it was only nobody but God. Even though I didn't know God as, like, as far as being going to church and stuff like that, I just felt the guidance from him. And then when I had the kids, and I said I would never, ever do my kids the way that she had done me. Although I still had all the mental issues as far as the rages and all that other stuff, it's just something I think in me with my you know, with the good parenting skills from my father as far as whatever he taught us when we was younger and when he would come and talk to us, I just took it from that. And I didn't have – it's kind of hard because actually I shouldn't be doing, you know, the – I should have been just like them. Because of everything that was going, I should have been medicating myself to make sure I don't remember none of the stuff that they was doing. But I had to be there for my kids. I had them – to love me, and I love them, and I was not going to do what was done to me to them.
Mm-hmm.
Although I slipped up a few times,
now,
I did.
Now, let me ask you this. To maintain them, how were you taking care of them? Were you working a job? Were you going to school? Were you getting any kind of help? Or were you, I mean, what were you doing to be able to maintain and take care of these?
Just the assistance from the welfare. But no, I didn't work. And then when they got older, I didn't want to work because I wanted to make sure I was there for them to try to protect them. And then as they got older, that's when I started working, when they got older. Because I wanted to make sure what everything that my mother didn't provide or do for us, I wanted to make sure I did it for them. So then when I did get out and get a job, they were still being taken care of. And I would get some things, but it was never to where they would have to be materialistic. I never got them to where, you know, if we didn't have it, we didn't have it. And then God will soon provide. I always kept on believing whatever my father said. When he kept on saying he was going to get us out, I kept on believing that the same way. And so and that's how it was with him. I said, whatever, however it happened, we provide. If we don't have it, we don't have to get it. We don't have to, you know, do this or do that. So I just did it that way.
So, okay, your third child, okay, when did you have your fourth child?
My fourth child came in when I was 19, going on 20.
Okay, so your daughter was about 2 to 3 years old by then.
Yeah.
Your second daughter, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now, this dad, was he black or white?
No. Now, right before him, when I was trying to reconcile with her dad, I thought I got pregnant again. And I thought the baby was his, but I also was sleeping with somebody else. And so because I thought I was pregnant by him and he was already doing what he was doing, I mean, when I say mental issues that I really had, I was doing high-speed chases on him, trying to run him over with the car. I did all, every time I did 100 miles an hour. We was racing down the freeway like cops and robbers because I was trying to kill him for how he treated us and all that other stuff. And so when I thought I was pregnant by him, I went and had an abortion, which was something I didn't never wanted to do in my life, but I did. And turned around and got pregnant the month later. 1 month later, too.
Oh, oh my God.
And it was just by just a random off the street guy. It was, and turns when I found out I was pregnant, and I found out that man was on drugs too at a young age. He was young. And I said, "You cannot come around my baby. You was not allowed to come around my baby." And I don't know what was the pattern. That was a pattern. Because everybody that I was with, he was via drugs or was drinking. But you couldn't tell.
Well, it was a good environment.
Mm-hmm.
That was
because
your environment.
Because there was so much abuse going on.
And you never went outside your environment. You never had an opportunity to work outside your environment. Now, me and you are not age. Now, I don't know if they had this in Detroit, but I know they had this in New York, where we lived at, in Albany. They had what we had. We had summer mothers. Do you know what summer mothers was? Did you know about the summer mother program?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No.
What it was, they would come in the – we lived in the – yes, I'm not – I live in a project. We lived in these projects, and it was a program that white folks had nice houses, swimmers had nice families, and for the summer – you would go stay with them for the summer.
Okay.
And you learn the better part of life, in other words. That kept a lot of the kids out of trouble. So had camps called Camp Opportunity. And we went every year. The bus would come get us. We stay overnight the whole 9 years. They always had something for us to do. That's different now because the kids don't really have a lot to do now like they used to. So that kind of deterred us to a certain extent not to get into a lot of stuff that was negative.
Right.
And it was good for the girls and it good for the kids, period. We had a summer mother that me, my oldest went to her, then my sister that was next to me, and then I went. All three of us took turns, and we actually went through them where we all was with this one summer mother. She would work with all those two. You get a certain age, then the next one would come, the next one. And they put boy and a girl. It was a father, a mother. Like, they were teaching us when father was a family was, because, you know, black folks don't have the father in the family. We needed to be taught how it was to live in a nice home with the swimming pool and the mother and father there. You spent the night and the whole night. You were like part of the family. You were just black.
Okay.
It did teach us a lot. Oh, that sounds weird, but it was like foster care to a certain extent, but you could go home. Okay.
Okay.
Those type of programs they put in place for us up there during that time. They don't have that kind of stuff anymore. So there's nobody. I guess black folks didn't have positive role models around them, so they had to go to the white folks to be, you know, to be around a positive role model. I guess that's what it. That was the whole gist of the program. But they did away with the program. They did away with Camp Opportunity, which I thought was a crazy thing for them to do, but they did. And then we had moved to Michigan after that. And we lived in Michigan, which, anyway, and then we moved down here. But I was saying that because I thought that was a positive thing that was happening in the ghetto or in the projects, opposed to you being exposed to negative and so much, you know, you tried to happy little girl, but everything that came your way was not good for you. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? And the obsession I had with sex. So, Ann, how much sex can you have with a little girl? You
mm-hmm.
understand what I'm saying? Everybody's visualized you as a damn walking vagina. That's basically what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that you were seeking them to a certain extent, but they don't understand why. All they knew was, here's a walking vagina. She got everything I need. I'm going to go ahead and do her. I don't care if she's 13. I don't care if she's 14. You know, what happened to her? And majorities were African-American males, right?
No. They were mixture. It was mixture. It was Hispanics. It was white. It was black. It was people that was in that area, And it was like when I got older and I look at it, I was like, I was these kids' ages sleeping with 30 or 40 year old guys.
Yeah.
And they thought and I was like, ugh, that's like sleeping with my daddy. But also in that area, some of the girls there was getting sold out from their mama to go with the older guys just to get their drink. And see, that's where it all is, that the mothers, the fathers was drunks. I call them dirty old men because you're dirty because you're preying on the teenagers. We sitting there, y'all sit up under a tree, and every time we walk past, you got something provocative to say to us that was disgusting, and I'm looking like, ugh. And then you got the mamas in the house that was either drinking, playing cards, or smoking, sending the kids out there to go turn a trick so you could get some money, so they could do that. And so we became being judged because they thought I was doing the exact same thing, but I wasn't. I had DMIs in a different way than them, and I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for somebody to love me, and it was just having to be older guys, anybody that paid attention to me. Because I was already told that I was ugly, so then I'm like, okay, if I'm ugly, then nobody, so it's a wrap, so I just do whatever. But it turned out not to be that way. Mm-hmm. But am I mad because I was already told that and I just felt that? But that environment was so bad that because the mother's doing what they doing and there's nobody to raise us. There was nobody. We had to raise ourselves. Just like I said, my mother, when my daddy left, at our last interview, while our daddy left, we became a parent. We had to watch her. We had to try to lift her up off the floor. She big. We kind of trying to lift her up off the floor because she done fell over because she out of it. You know, so we all had to, in that area, we all had to take care of our own self and do what we had to do. But people started judging. And I said, well, you know what? I wrote everything in the book. Everything is the truth. Everything word for word. Whatever happened, read the book. Then y'all will find out. You'll find out why we was doing this. You'll find out why. Because I even tried to do the white people drugs, that sniffing glue. And I'm looking like, okay, this ain't for me because ain't nothing happening. And then I felt that I always, once you start drinking or smoking, you're not in control no more. You lose that control because you faded, you're so foggy, your mind is foggy, and I didn't want to be attacked no more, even though I was never attacked by being under influence, but it wasn't for me. So I'm like, ain't no sense, I'm not feeling nothing, and that was that. So that was another reason why I choose not to. Then another reason why I didn't want to smoke, drink, or whatever, because it was going to take away from food from my kids. And if I go spend a dollar on a beer or something, which is nasty, that's taken away from them because they could have had some milk. They could have went towards their milk, they sandwiches or something like that. And I made sure we had some stuff on. But we still fell on hard times. But it's a lesson in all of the stuff that we went through. And now this book, Casualty of Silence, is a lesson because, one, it teaches you not to judge. You know, find out what's going on. These kids are not out here just to do that. I was seeking attention. I was running from something from the house, wound up getting in a more dangerous situation, and this was the result. And then I wasn't afraid to just be with anybody. It was just like it was a normal thing to do.
And you had no fear because there was no boundaries that were set for you. You never had any boundaries to say, you know what, no, I'm not going to do it, and no, mom and dad told me not to do it. I guess with your dad, and reading the story, your dad in and out of you guys' life like he was, and I understand about the drug thing, but I you said your sister was angry with him. You know what? Mm-hmm. I can almost justify her anger because despite him not always being there, look what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying? Regardless of him promising you all this, and you noticed after a while that he was never going to come and take you out of your situation, your dad could have avoided a lot of this, regardless of him being on drugs, whatever. If he could come and beat you, he could come to a man having sex with his 14 and 15-year-old daughter. It shouldn't have been a difference. That, I guess that's what I want to say. I would have
I know.
And it's understandable.
Right. And I think with me, with my heart, kindness, and the way, I didn't have that. I just kept feeling like, okay, he was going to get us out. We just trusted by him. It was just a trust there. Like, okay, he said he's going to do it. We just wait. Like, Daddy, when are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? When are you going to do this? And it never happened. It never happened until I turned my age. I turned 18 and I got out of it. And then I should have never been with the person that I was with because it wasn't no better. He didn't make my life better. He wasn't my rescuer. He added to more of my trauma. But then I look at it when God had me to write the book, he made me realize that everything was for a reason. My story is to help someone else who's going through the same thing, to stop judging people that look standing on the street corner, stop judging somebody that's drinking and smoking, because it could have been me. And it's a reason behind everybody they have a story behind the reason why they're doing that. And my mother was one of them.
Exactly.
My mother is one.
Exactly.
My cousin is one.
Lady H, she was a judging person after a while. You realize how she was. I was reading that.
Yeah, and that's my daughter's grandmother. Yep. And I realized that whatever I said, I trusted in her. She used it to backfire for me not to be with her son. And her son was the one that was causing the problems. But they was too good for us. She felt like, and she was in an abusive relationship as far as physical abuse. And she was trying to, she used whatever I confided in her against me so I wouldn't be with her son. And that kind of, that hurted me to where you was like my other mama. You was like the other mama that I, because you live there and I'm spending it all every day at your house if I'm not running the street or whatever. And she used it against me. She used everything that I confided in her against me, so I wouldn't be with her. No good son. And that's what he is, a no good son. And right now today, he still got that one daughter. And I could count on two hands how many times he saw her, and that girl is 28 years old.
Because those were the guys that came in your life that weren't really supporting you. They came and they taught a lesson, and they moved on, as they sound like they moved on. Now, let me ask you this. Are you in relationship with any of the fathers of your kids? Now, wait a minute. Before we go, how many kids do you have that you actually
have? I have six. So by the time I turned 23, I have six kids. I got a set of twins, which one of them is on the phone listening in.
Okay.
So was the one that was talking. They are. They my last, and they 24 right now. And by that time I turned that age, 23, I had six kids, and no. They keep telling me, Mama, you can't feel this way about them, but I have a grudge against every last their fathers. I do. Because I raised them kids by myself with no help.
Okay, so you're saying financially they did not help out, they did not support?
No, not really, when we really needed, when I really, really needed them, they was not, they turned their back. And I felt that them are my kids and I love them enough to not turn my back on them. These are your kids, well, whoever daddy was. So when I asked you for the help, you should have jumped at it because them are your babies. When we need your help.
But you got to stand in mind.
No,
go ahead.
I just felt that when I needed them to not turn their back on them. And I think that's the thing. It probably goes in hand with my father because when we needed him, he wasn't there. He was always doing this promise this and promise that. I looked at it a little bit different because I had so much love for my father. But this man, I mean, I really, really needed him.
Mm-hmm.
I really needed them to be there for them, and that the kids tell me now, Mama, don't feel that way about them. And I'm like, no, because in part two, it really get rough. It really get.
Mm-hmm.
to be where I needed them, and I just had to anchor towards them now.
Let me say this, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Have to understand, when we women get pregnant with these men, we can't make them have anything to that child they decide not to. And I'm going to say, because this was very irresponsible, and when we have these babies, we don't know the agenda why we're having them. Like one of them is that sometimes when the woman or the girl is lonely and she wants somebody to love her, that's you. That's not him. It's a
right
decision you made or
right.
I made. Because I'm missing something in my life. But the men, and I'm not all men, but there's a large amount of our men that are nothing but sperm donors. You can't expect to get anything, sperm, okay? That's all he
right.
is. It's a sperm donor. So being angry at him is a waste of energy you doing something positive with. I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
get him. I wouldn't, because he was a sperm donor. That's all he was. There was no love lost between them, because if it was love lost, he would still be there.
Right.
And we have to come to that. You know, we women, we're so quick to say that. Hold up. He was nothing but a sperm donor. Because if he was more than that, you wouldn't have to struggle as hard. Because a real man, a real father, a real daddy is going to for his children. Regardless of what's going on, he's going to be there for his kids because he's about the kids. If y'all never
right.
get back together again, it's about that, making sure that child has everything they need. So
right.
he was a sperm donor. So once you put it in your mind that all he was a sperm donor, you'll feel that's what he was. Because if he wasn't 24, 25, 28 years later, he still ain't doing nothing. He was a sperm donor. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So don't waste your energy being angry at him. Please don't. You got too much of a good thing going on. You've got a message to get out to these young girls who were in your boat, and that's wasted energy. You can use your energy for something else. Don't be angry at them. They know what they were. That's why they don't say nothing. That's why they don't get upset. They were sperm donors. You got to know the difference between a father, a dad, a sperm donor. And lots
right.
of us women, no matter what we go through, we don't. It's not clarified in our head what their job was. Their job was basically their sperm to make a baby, because you took care of everything else. You struggled, you know. It deserves better, so much, and you deserve so much more. So don't settle for less. You have to settle for less.
Right.
You've been through too much in your life to say what you. Don't
yeah. Laugh. I've been through a whole lot. Wait till you read part two and three. You're going to be like, really, this it continues.
Oh. Okay. Now, does all your kids live around you?
No. I have the two that's close by. The oldest one is in prison. The twins that's on the phone live like in another. They still live in Michigan, but not that far. I mean, it's far, but not as far from me. And my other daughter lives on the west side. So I do communicate with them by talking. I always want to make sure, because I have a good bond with my kids. I'm very. I'm still overprotective with them, and they're older. And I always say, you got to talk to me
yeah.
every time so I can make sure I know y'all okay. I get on here, like, okay, I'm going to get a belt. We too old for it. No, you're not. Because if I say I need to hear y'all, I still have that closeness that I have to feel, you know, that I need with them. And so I get on them. So I talk to the girls. I see one of them, but I talk to the girls all the time, the girl all the time, because, well, with the grandkids and all that other stuff, and twins running our family, because we have all three sets of them, so.
Oh, man.
I have set my sister have a set. Yeah. It's amazing to see two of the same at once.
Yeah.
But it do. But I have a bond with them. I really have a bond. Even with the grandkids, I really have a good bond with them.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I can't get rid of them if I try to.
Now, let me ask you this. Since all of this has happened to you, have you sought any type of help, mental help?
Yes. I do. I feel, although I still have partly healed, and I credit for God and for the book, giving me a lot of awareness to know what to know how to heal. I do feel at times it'd be overwhelming. I do. I have someone. This one actually comes to my house, so I don't have to go catching buses and all that. She comes to the house.
Okay. And are you able to financially? Are you able to take care of yourself financially through this? Because I know it affects you. People don't realize it, but when you have mental health problems. Financially, it does financially because some of the things that you used to do, you can't do anymore. And that's like literally taking care of yourself, making sure bills are paid. So are you're able to live?
Mm-hmm. I'm able to do that, especially so far as getting over a car accident when I was driving transportation and I couldn't. And now I have an illness with called fibromyalgia, which I'm in pain constantly every day. But because of who I am and I always fight through things, I still try to keep myself busy. And so now I started doing a lot of community work as far as things that didn't happen when I was growing up, providing safety. We follow kids to school to make sure they're not in danger because in Detroit, a lot of people like to kidnap people. And kids, especially because we done had a counter where a guy tried to snatch a little boy up off the street and all that. But because he was there, he was not. We prevented it. So I love doing the stuff that we do now, passing out food, they pass out clothes. You know, everything that I needed back then that wasn't there, I'm a part of now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. That is awesome. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to tell everyone where we can get the book from. And do you do any speaking again?
I haven't started yet. I would love to start doing speaking engagements because I think everyone should hear about casualty of silence so they can start speaking up, so they can start healing, so they can start talking that evilness out of their system. I would love to do that, and hopefully eventually someone will call on me to say, I want you to come and speak at this event here or there or whatever. And then by me being a part of the community, I do get a chance to speak when the people come and start getting food and stuff. They sit there and they listen, and I tell them my story. And they was like, they'd be happy to hear. And once I tell my story, they begin to tell theirs, even if they never told it to another soul. They kept it to themselves. Mm-hmm. They started telling me.
I would love to do that. If I could ground it into my time, I would love for you to do that for me, to do that. As a matter of fact, actually, you ever thought about this would be a great way? Just think about it. Of you actually doing a video talking about your book and then talking about your life or have someone interview you on video or you just talk and tell, you know, and people can take your video and send it out to different people and they can hear your story. That's another way that you can market yourself that way and groups would love to talk to you that way. I mean.
Okay.
The reason why I say that is because I've done it. I did a couple of videos here locally about some stuff that was going on in the community, in the black community that the rest of the city wasn't paying attention to, and I didn't expect for it to get the humdrum that it got. And it literally had the city council and the city looking at the disparities in the black neighborhoods opposed to the white neighborhoods. All I did was go around and do a film. I filmed different areas I'm telling you, video now is a hot thing when it comes to marketing your book, when it comes to you marketing yourself. Video is a hot thing because people are in front of that computer. I'm in front of my computer more than I'm anywhere else. So I think that would be, you could think about maybe putting together a video telling who you are and showing your book and talking about your book with people and say, here's my story. We'll talk about it off air. I won't go on, but it's a good way to market yourself. And it can be very inexpensive.
Okay.
Because I know it's financially is being in the book business, being an author, it can be a financial, if you don't know what you're doing or you don't know which direction to go into, it can be financially despair.
Right.
Oh, man, I'm down 9 seconds. Well, anyway, I want to say thank you very much, Ms. Moore. I love the conversation. I love the book. I will be pushing your book. I would love to work on you coming down and talking to some of the people here because we have that going on down here. We have a lot of interest going on down here. and I want to say thank you again. And when you finish your other book, please let me know so we can get you back on the show. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So
and then we'll
night.
Just talk offline because we got each other numbers.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And I'll try to help you as much as I can. Okay?
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
Okay, let's see. Okay, you guys, thank you for listening in to Through the Eyes of the Black Network, presented by the Say It Peace Network. Excuse me. I can't even talk tonight. But I want to say thank you again, you guys, and I want to say good night, and bye-bye.